The headlines. Iran launches more missile and drone strikes on the positions of Iraq-based terror groups operating against Tehran. Hamas says Israel will pay the price for its crimes after four Palestinians were killed in a new Israeli attack on the Jenin refugee camp. And Russia calls on the U.S. to respond whether it was behind attacks on underwater natural gas pipelines in Europe. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps says it has once again pounded bases of anti-Iran terrorist groups located in Iraq's semi-autonomous Kurdistan region. The IRGC says it used precision guide or strike missiles and combat drones in its operation on Wednesday morning, adding that it has inflicted heavy losses on those terror groups. The IRGC has been conducting raids on positions of the terrorist hideouts in the Kurdistan region since September the 24th. It says it had urged Iraqi Kurdish officials to wipe out the presence of those terrorist outfits. But according to the IRGC, the Kurdistan regional government brushed aside its warnings and failed to adopt an inappropriate measure. The IRGC says terrorists in northern Iraq have recently infiltrated Iran's border and attacked a number of outposts. The terrorists in northern Iraq are reported to have capitalized on protests over the death of an Iranian woman in police custody and largely involved in inciting riots across Iran. London police have released images of 13 suspects involved in violence during a recent protest outside of the Iranian embassy over the death of Mahsa Amini. The Met Police called the violence unacceptable, vowing to trace the culprits with obvious intent to cause injury. Five police officers were seriously injured in clashes with protesters. 12 people were arrested during the disorder. Meanwhile, London's mayor, Sadiq Khan, denounced the acts of violence by the protesters outside of the Iranian embassy on Sunday. Khan said attacks on the police and communities will never be tolerated. The mayor said a, quote, selfish minority who attempted to hijack the protest must be brought to justice. Earlier, we were joined by our correspondent in London site, Purusa, who gave us an update on the Met Police investigation into the unrest outside of Iran's embassy in London.
So what the police are doing now is we've heard one of the commanders say that they will not allow such violent actions to take place in London at a time when the police are trying to make to ensure that peaceful demonstrations take place, if any, and that they are asking members of the public by releasing the images of 13 of those mobsters to come forward and say whether or not they can identify or recognize any of them so they can go after them. And as the police commander said, bring them to justice.
Reports coming out of Iraq say several rockets have landed in the fortified green zone in the capital, Baghdad. At least four security personnel were injured after a number of Katyusha rockets hit the area. One of the rockets landed in front of parliament, which was in a session to decide on the speaker's resignation request. Lawmakers voted overwhelmingly against Mohammed al-Halbusi's resignation. There were also fresh protests near Parliament, with demonstrators demanding the dissolution of legislature to pave the way for early elections. Iraq has been in a political deadlock since October. That when an alliance led by Cleric Muqtada al-Sadr won the most seats, but he failed to form a government amid differences with other political groups. Mourners bid farewell to the two of four Palestinians killed in an Israeli raid on the Jenin refugee camp in the occupied West Bank. The two were identified as Abdul Rahman Khazim and Muhammad al-Awni. Hazim was the brother of a Palestinian man who was killed by the regime back in April over an alleged shooting in Tel Aviv. Earlier on Wednesday, Israeli forces stormed the camp and encircled the house of Hazim's family before targeting it with a rocket. Dozens of Palestinians also sustained injuries as the raid sparked clashes. The resistance movement Hamas has warned that Israel would pay the price of its crimes. Hamas spokesman says the killings won't deter Palestinians from their path of resistance until Palestine is liberated fully. The Palestinian Prime Minister Mohammed Shtayyeh also condemned the attack, saying the Israeli regime will be responsible for the repercussions of its, quote, gruesome crime. Earlier, our Ramallah correspondent Mona Kandil joined us to put the picture about the latest deadly Israeli raid in the occupied West Bank.
Israeli military said that Israeli soldiers and special forces raided Jenin refugee camp and encircled the family home of Palestinian martyr Raad Hazem, who was killed in April after carrying out an anti-Israeli operation back in April. Of course, his father and other family members were on the run. The Israeli soldiers wanted to arrest his father, his brother, and other family members, but they didn't succeed to arrest them. However, Israeli soldiers fired anti-tank missiles and clashed with the Palestinians inside the house of Palestinian martyr Raad Hazem. This led to the killing of his brother. Palestinian was inside during the operation to Jenin and during the raid to Jenin. Confrontations took place between the Israeli soldiers and Palestinian resistance fighters. A third Palestinian has been wounded, and now the fourth Palestinian succumbed to his injuries he sustained during the clashes that took place in Jenin. We are speaking about over 44 Palestinians had been wounded, according to the Palestinian Health Ministry.
Russia pledges to continue a special military operation in Ukraine, at least until it captures the whole Donetsk region. The Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov said it is necessary to liberate the self-proclaimed Donetsk People's Republic. The remarks came after Ukraine's four regions overwhelmingly voted in favor of joining Russia in a five-day referendum. The voting took place in Luhansk and Donetsk regions in the east, as well as the Russian-controlled Kherson and Zaporizhia regions in the south. Russia had previously vowed to protect the territories at all costs if they chose to become part of Russia. Western countries have slammed the votes as illegal and a sham, saying that they will not accept the outcome, whatever it may be. The EU has also proposed a new round of sanctions against Russia. Time now for the news review of this bulletin. The Polish member of European Parliament suggests the United States was behind the recent attacks on Russian-owned Nord Stream pipelines built to transfer gas to Europe by the Baltic Sea. On his Twitter account, Radoslaw Sikorski has shared a photograph of a gas leak with a caption saying, "Thank you, USA." The former Polish foreign minister implies that Washington had deliberately inflicted damage on the pipelines. In a separate post, Sikorski says the Nord Stream is, quote, only logic for the Russian president to be able to blackmail or wage a war on Eastern Europe. On Tuesday, Swedish authorities issued a warning of two leaks on the Nord Stream 1 pipeline shortly after Denmark reported a leak on the defunct Nord Stream 2. Russia and several European countries called them acts of sabotage. Gas pipelines are at the center of an energy standoff between the West and Russia. As the debate heats up over the leaks from the Russian-owned Nord Stream pipelines, let me bring in our correspondent, Jerome Hughes, from Brussels, who joins us to give us the latest on that. Bijan Tavassili is a political analyst who joins us from Hamburg for an analysis. Okay, Jerome, first to you. It can't be a slip, can it, when you go and you tweet something like this, because you have to actually put some thought into typing it out and then put the caption, "Thank you, USA," or I think that's what it said. Do you think therefore that the U.S. is guilty? What do you have on that in terms of any new developments, maybe?
Yes, well, Kaveh, it's not just the Polish politician who is saying this. I mean, they are in the minority, but there's quite a sizable number of MEPs in the European Parliament here who are asking questions. And even if you look at the hierarchy in the EU itself, the European Commission, they're not coming directly out and saying, you know, Russia is to blame for this. They're being very candid, or they're being very careful in terms of their remarks. And you know, we had a press conference just 2 hours ago involving Ursula von der Leyen, the head of the Commission, and the foreign policy chief, Joseph Borrell. I call it a press conference. It wasn't. They just came out and read for 9 minutes a statement talking about the eighth round of sanctions. But they didn't actually address the issue of the pipeline at all. And that's because there is a growing feeling and a lot of questions being asked. Why on earth would Moscow sabotage these pipelines? And why would the EU do it? Because, you know, you have, as I say, the powers that be here. They have, in theory, they have one idea or one eye on the idea that, you know, Vladimir Putin won't be there forever. There might be a more favorable or friendly government that comes in after Vladimir Putin, and therefore or they would like these gas pipelines to stay in place so that actually the flows of gas can start running again, because this idea of just transitioning to, you know, green energy overnight, it's not feasible, and they know that. So therefore, they're, you know, all sort of eyes and sort of many of the eyes here, for example, in the European Parliament, are looking towards the United States, because the United States really is the only one that has anything to gain out of all of this. You remember, and you see that on social media is awash with the clip of Joe Biden before February the 24th, standing beside Olaf Scholz, saying that, you know, listen, we will bring an end to Nord Stream 2, the new gas pipeline from Russia, bringing Russian gas into the EU, into Germany. We will bring an end to it. One journalist asked him at the time, you know, well, this is a deal between Germany and Russia and the EU and Russia, so, you know, how can you get involved? I'm paraphrasing, but he more or less said, listen, we can do it. We will do it, he said, if there is an escalation in Ukraine, which we saw then on the 24th of February. So listen, make no mistake about it. All the indications are there well before now that the United States would have an interest in this. And the reality is, Kaveh, that, you know, at this, when we see energy prices in the United States, very manageable at the moment for consumers. Here in the EU, everything is out of control in terms of energy costs. So actually, not only are things stabilized in the United States for ordinary people, but now we have a situation whereby the United States, which is a net exporter of energy, can start sending more energy to the European Union and making huge profits. So obviously, if you just look at all the data that's available, it just all points to the United States. That's what some MEPs are saying here.
Bijan Tavassoli, so do you agree with that, that the U.S. is guilty of that? And of course, when you take a look at the process of elimination, we could see that the only one to really gain from this is the U.S.
Exactly. And until now, the U.S. hasn't even denied being responsible for the blown-up pipelines. And this pipeline, well, Nord Stream 2 at least, has cost over 10 billion euros to construct. So it's a huge asset linking Russian natural reserves to European industry, especially German industry. And there's no potential reason for the Russian side to blow it up. But as I have been informed, there's a fourth explosion site where the bomb has not gone off, and the German Navy is in the process of recovering that bomb, that unexploded bomb, and we will see whether it has written made in the USA all over it, and that would certainly lead to a diplomatic crisis. But even now we're seeing that the German position has now changed irreversibly. For days, politicians in Berlin have been concerned about huge European and German companies announcing that they're closing their German factories and moving to the United States because of lower prices of natural gas and oil there, and lower production costs. And so we're seeing the deindustrialization of entire parts of Western Europe. And this trend might now be irreversible, because some are claiming that the damage done to the pipelines, where salt water has been leaking inside the pipelines and corroding them, might already be to such a degree that repair might not be feasible.
Thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. That's Bijan Tavassoli, political analyst from Hamburg. Jerome Hughes from Brussels, a correspondent there, with an update on the story. And with that, we come to an end for this news review. Thanks for tuning in. Welcome back. Turkish military forces have launched artillery attacks on several villages in the northeastern Syrian province of Hasaka, killing two children and injuring six more civilians. Local sources say that the Turkish troops shelled villages in the town of Abu Rasin. The attacks also caused material damage. Turkey has been conducting military operations in Syria since 2016 to target Kurdish militants known as the People's Protection Units, or the YPG. Ankara also deployed thousands of its forces to Syria in 2019 under the same pretext. Recently, the Turkish president hinted at his country's plan for a new cross-border operation to purge YPG fighters, who form the backbone of U.S.-backed militant group, the so-called Syrian Democratic Forces. The Syrian government decries the Turkish military presence as an outright violation of the country's sovereignty and territorial integrity. Lebanese workers and depositors tried to storm the parliament compound on Monday amid the country's economic crisis. Retired military personnel demanded better monthly pay, while depositors called on the banks to release their life savings. Our correspondent Mariam Saleh has more from Beirut.
The crisis hit Lebanon is once again a scene of angry masses. The parliament is back to meet and debate a new budget. Yet protesters see the budget being discussed as elusive.
Instead of putting together a budget which encourages development in agriculture, industrial production, and all fields in Lebanon, they want to impoverish the people and push them to die in the sea as they immigrate illegally. The government, which relies on debt, is being controlled by a mob, which is the Banks Association and the Central Bank. They should be held accountable for getting billions of dollars out of the country.
Banks reopened partially on Monday following a week-long closure in the wake of a wave of holdups. Depositors stormed at least seven bank branches in the capital and abroad, demanding their trapped savings.
We know these banks, you know, where we invested our money. But unfortunately, they stole the money between themselves, and they plan, and every time they create a story.
One woman named Saleh Hafiz forced one branch to give her $13,000 of her savings, saying she needed it to pay for her sister's medical treatment. But she didn't take back her money on her own.
They left us no other choice. We encouraged Sally, and we were with her when she held up the bank, because it was a humanitarian situation, and we will be with all the people who urgently need their money. Our government is rotten and corrupt, and so is the judicial system.
The government has been procrastinating while time is running out. The governmental institutions, including schools, are almost out of service.
The entire governmental sector is paralyzed. The workers, the military personnel, the ministerial workers, the public teachers, they all have rights and they can barely do their job. There's no health care, no educational assistance. The budget plan the parliament is debating today is unfair.
Lebanon's economic downfall began in October 2019. The Lebanese pound has lost around 90% of its value against the U.S. dollar, but officials have failed to put in place necessary reforms. Mariam Saleh, Beirut.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
In a recent statement, the United Nations agencies and the Association of International Development Agencies, AIDA, working in the occupied Palestinian territories, called on the Israeli regime to allow Palestinian human rights and humanitarian organizations to continue their work. We now present you an article written by Isaac Scher. The piece is titled CIA Unable to Corroborate Israel's Terror Label for Palestinian Rights Groups. classified CIA report shows the agency was unable to find any evidence to support the Israeli regime's decision to label six prominent Palestinian NGOs as terrorist organizations. In October, the Zionist regime labeled as terror groups Adamir Prisoner Support and Human Rights Association, Dal Haq, the Bissan Center for Research and Development, Defense for Children International Palestine, the Union of Agricultural Work Committees, and the Union of Palestinian Women Committees. The Israeli regime claimed that the organizations were front groups for the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, the PFLP, a Palestinian political party and resistance group that has a paramilitary branch. According to two sources familiar with the study, earlier this year, Israeli regime passed intelligence about the designation to the United States, but a CIA intelligence assessment of the material did not find any evidence to support the claim. A second source said the assessment was highly classified. Numerous states, including allies of the Israeli regime, have rejected the terror designation as unfounded. The United States has not publicly criticized or questioned it, but neither has it placed the Palestinian groups under a U.S. terror designation. Omar Shaker, the Israel-Palestine Director of Human Rights Watch, said, in light of the CIA's assessment, the United States should very clearly call on the Israeli regime to reverse these designations and to allow these organizations to continue with their vital work. Omar Shaker added, "The reality here is that the United States has far too long turned a blind eye, and in some cases even green-lighted, quite serious Israeli government abuses." He added, "The position towards the Palestinian human rights organizations highlights a much larger failing in U.S. government policy on the Israeli-Palestinian issue, and puts the United States squarely out of touch with the consensus in the human rights movement." Since announcing the designation, the Zionist regime has continued its effort to stop the six non-governmental organizations, NGOs, from continuing their advocacy work. On Thursday, 18th of August, the Israeli military raided the West Bank offices of all six groups, confiscating property, sealing off office doors, and posting official notices declaring the groups illegal. After the raids, the State Department spokesperson Ned Price confirmed that the U.S. government has analyzed Israel's evidence for the terror charge. Ned Price said, "What happened last year is the Israeli cabinet designated these organizations, claiming we have not followed through with any designations, nor have we changed our approach to these organizations." Ned Price declined to comment on the CIA report and referred The Guardian to the CIA. The CIA did not respond to The Guardian's questions. The classified assessment mirrors the findings of European governments that were also shown dossiers of Israeli evidence. Last month, nine member states of the European Union said in a joint statement, "No substantial information was received from Israel that would justify reviewing our policy towards the six Palestinian non-governmental organizations." According to political analysts, the designation was intended in part to dry up the purported European funding streams to the Palestinian non-governmental organizations, NGOs, but the tactic has proved unsuccessful. According to Lara Friedman, the president of the Foundation for West Asia Peace, the U.S. government's public stance is a mixed one. Lara Friedman said, "A lot of us would have liked to see an affirmative rebuttal of the designations," adding, "They didn't do that, but there's been nothing undertaken by this administration that would suggest they're viewing these organizations as terrorist organizations. But she added, the U.S. administration has had 10 months to convince Israel to reverse the designations. Instead, this is now Israeli law. A handful of U.S. legislators have publicly criticized the Israeli regime's terror designation. Recently, Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley and 21 other Democrats sent a letter to Antony Blinken, the Secretary of State, and Avril Haines, the Director of National Intelligence, urging the U.S. government to stand up to the Israeli regime. The lawmakers wrote, a reported lack of evidence to support this decision raises concerns that it may be a deeply repressive measure designed to criminalize and silence prominent and essential Palestinian human rights organizations. According to a claim by the federal government source, Antony Blinken has shied away from the issue of the designation since Israel announced them. The U.S. Secretary of State himself said basically, this isn't something we want to touch too much. The source claimed, most letters written to the Secretary of State don't make it to his desk verbatim in full. Beyond lawmakers' public effort to address the issue, there have been private challenges to the Israeli designation. Last year, an Israeli delegation provided a similar dossier and briefing to members of Congress. That dossier, seen by The Guardian, repeats claims that the groups are cover institutions for the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, the PFLP. But a congressional source said at the briefing, there was dismay at the quality of the dossier's evidence. Among skeptics was the Florida Democratic Congressman Ted Deutch, who has described himself as a passionate supporter of Israel. The source said after receiving the dossier, Ted Deutch told the Israeli delegation its evidence was insufficient. Deutsch's office did not respond to a request for comment. Furthermore, in a recent statement, the United Nations agencies and the Association of International Development Agencies, AIDA, working in the occupied Palestinian territories, called on the Israeli regime to allow Palestinian human rights and humanitarian organizations to continue with their work. The United Nations agencies and the Association of International Development Agencies, AIDA, said the attempted closure of these organization offices represents the latest in a series of actions by the Israeli regime that limit the ability of human rights, humanitarian and development work in the occupied Palestinian territories and affect all institutions working to promote human rights and development. The statement said, we urge Israel to refrain from any action that would prevent these organizations from continuing their critical human rights, humanitarian and developmental work in the occupied Palestinian territories. The United Nations agencies and the Association of International Development Agencies, AIDA, stressed that the Israeli authorities had provided no compelling evidence to justify the terrorist label that they had put on the Palestinian organizations. In a press statement cited by Palestine's official Wafa news agency on Thursday, 18th of August, Amnesty International called for an end to the stifling of Palestinian civil society organizations at the hands of Israeli occupation authorities. Amna Gwelali, Amnesty International's Deputy Director for West Asia and North Africa, said, the Israeli occupation authorities must end their campaign of repression against Palestinian civil society and let organizations carry out their work free from harassment. Urging all governments to condemn the Israeli army's attack on Palestinian civil society, Amna Gwelali added, these organizations have contributed enormously to human rights in the occupied Palestinian territories and across the globe, yet Israeli army boots trample all over their work. She said the international community needs to work together, not only to reopen the offices of these seven organizations, but also to honor their calls to support the International Criminal Court's, the ICC's investigation into the Palestinian situation and for international condemnation of Israel's apartheid against Palestinians. Also, the Palestinian Ministry of Foreign Affairs strongly censured Israel's unlawful military raid on the offices of Palestinian human rights organizations and civil society organizations in Ramallah and in Al-Bira. The Palestinian Ministry of Foreign Affairs in a statement said the Israeli occupation forces looted documents, seized equipment and sealed off offices in another clear attempt to repress and intimidate those documenting and pursuing accountability for Israeli crimes. It warned, as Israel's illegal occupation and apartheid regime becomes further entrenched, Palestinian civil society and human rights defenders will continue to be among the prime targets as they play a key role in monitoring and documenting Israel's crimes and violations against the Palestinian people. The Palestinian Ministry of Foreign Affairs further said, documentation, advocacy, humanitarian aid, and legal work are the hallmarks of democracy and essential for the protection of human rights worldwide. The statement added, the work of human rights defenders must be protected. The statement said, absence of political will to hold the Israeli regime accountable for its decades of crimes and violations enables its continued war against international human rights movements.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, this is the member you are listening to. Today we invite you to listen to an English lecture by Brother Amin Rastani.
Tonight what we want to do, I want to go to one of the hadiths of Imam Ar-Ridha alayhi salam. If Imam Hussein did what he did, is to preserve these teachings from ensuing imams, like Imam Ar-Ridha alayhi salam, which Imam Ar-Ridha is very special by the way. It begins like this, لَا يَتِمُّ عَقْلُ مْرِئٍ إِلَّا or حَتَّى تَكُونَ فِيهِ عَشْرُ خِصَالٍ, that the aql and intellect of an individual is not complete until these 10 things we see it in them. Okay. الْخَيْرُ مِنْهُ مَأْمُولٍ. Number one. خَيْر and goodness is something that you have hopes in that person to come from them. الشر منه مأمون means that, look, don't, if you got the khair part down, we got to make sure that the shar is at a minimum and inshallah just absent completely. الشر منه مأمون. مأمون comes from amn and aman, means safety. That's characteristic number two of these people who have figured it out. Number three, I like this one a lot. يستكثر قليل الخير من غيره. Yastakfiru means they consider it abundant. They consider it a lot. Consider what a lot? The khair that others do. Someone might do the smallest thing, but this person, you know, the way they receive it, the way they deal with it, you feel like this person feels like this guy did the best thing in the world for them. And this is due to their humility. Once again, due to how they have understood things properly, to the point that khair for them is khair. Khair is khair. And so I will acknowledge khair. You know, there are, once again, let's not be the one who everyone feels like they're never good enough for us. That's not how the Prophet was, sallallahu alaihi wasallam. No, he would acknowledge khair. We have stories for this one too. I'm telling a lot of stories tonight, but I think it's good, beneficial. That there was a youth that was dying. And as he's dying, he said, they bring the Prophet next to him because they're like, this kid is like suffering. What's going on? The Prophet comes, finds out that the mom is not happy with the son. And so the Prophet really intercedes. And he's telling the mom, now's not the time to be upset with him and so on. And Anyway, the mom says, okay, because of you, O Prophet, I forgive him for whatever he's done. Brothers and sisters, on the side, parentheses, man. Let me open a parentheses here. Parents, man. Parents, parents, parents. No matter what, I disagree with them, that's fine. Respect. The respect. The respect. But they're wrong. Well, if they were right, it wouldn't be a test, okay? My mom told me to play 6 hours of video games, and I just disagreed. That's not a test. Or, Molana, you know, I've been a good kid today. Why? 6 hours of video games, she told me, and I play those 6 hours? Mashallah. It's when they're wrong, quote unquote, and that's in your eyes, not always the case that they're not going to be wrong. It's when you don't agree, or when you feel like it's not reasonable, which Allah's watching. All right, are you going to keep the respect or not? That's the. Even if you close your mouth, you don't say anything, and you're like, you know what, I have to keep their respect. And as you go out, you slam the door. Habibi, that's not how it works either. No, if you want to leave, you leave in a respectful way, in a way that it doesn't hurt them. But that's hard, Molana. Well, that's how we grow. No one's going to grow eating donuts. All right? No one's going to get fit eating ice cream and donuts. It takes work. All right. So the Prophet tells this kid, okay, your mom has forgiven you and all of that. Recite this. Ya man yaqbalu al-yaseer. Oh, the one who accepts the little bit. وَيَعْفُ عَنِ الْكَثِيرِ and forgives the great sins that we do. اِقْبَلْ مِنِّ الْيَسِيرِ except from me the little bit that I have. وَعْفُ عَنِ الْكَثِيرِ and the great sins of mine. Oh Allah, forgive them. So this youth is repeating this dua now. And so in the beginning he said, I'm seeing like these monsters coming toward me. Now he says those monsters are gone and I see something else coming. A beautiful individual is coming my way. Anyway, he passed away in a good way. The point I'm trying to make here is, other than the parent point that I made, is that look, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is like this. يَقْبَلُ الْيَسِيرُ Allah accepts the little bit that we give Him. Really, we give Him a little bit. It's out of Him, out of His greatness that He gives us Jannah. 60 years of my life, 70 years of my life, I dedicate to Allah. And that doesn't mean 24/7 I'm doing ibadah. That means 15 minutes a day, right? Now, some people are more talented and more professional. They do it like 5 prayers in like 10 minutes, if you add it all up. Some who are less professional, like myself, maybe 20 minutes, yeah, of prayer throughout the day. That's our dedication, Ramadan, other things that we do for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, inshallah. It's not easy, but I mean, it's not like it's taking up all of our time. I always tell kids this, how many minutes do we have in a day? 1,440 minutes per day. Allah's like, hey, give me 20 minutes of this for your salat, man, throughout the day. That's not too much to ask for. Anyway, this little bit we're giving Him, He's promising us eternity and infinity. Come on, like what more could we ask for? It's just like, do I stick to the now or do I invest into the later and have a normal good time now as well? It's fine. Which one am I going to choose? La yatimu aqlu mri'in. We got to be aqil, brothers and sisters, when it comes to this balance that we have to have in life. All right, you can probably guess number 4 now. Yastakthiru qalil al khayr min ghayrihi. يَسْتَقِلُّ كَثِيرَ الْخَيْرِ مِنْ نَفْسِهِ There is one time, that one place, one case, that our scholars will say it is okay to be selfish, greedy. And I don't like to use those words, because they're negative words. But to feel like it's never enough, I've never had enough. And that's what, when it comes to building your akhirah. And so these individuals, the khair of others is a lot for them because that has nothing to do with them. But for me, everyone in the world tells me, oh my God, mashallah, you're the best. You've done the most righteous deeds and all that kind of stuff. It's not enough for me. Because why? Because the sky is the limit. This is what we learn from Ahlul Bayt. Imam al-Hasan, as he's passing away, he's weeping. Why are you weeping? You've done Hajj 25 times, given your wealth 2-3 times in the way of Allah, etc., etc. Like these individuals know there's still room for more. There's still room for more. Our ulama were like that too. We want the higher levels of Jannah. I just want to give you one example for this one as well, which is mind-blowing. Every time I remember this, I get goosebumps. Allama Tabatabai. To whom the Shia today owe a lot, even those who might not like him. I don't know why they don't like him. But there's some people out there just jahil. But I would say 95% of the Muslims, the Shia out there, they acknowledge what he's done for Tashayyu today. And the students he's left behind, one of which passed away recently, Ayatollah Hassan Zada Amuli. All right, we talked about him the first night. Anyway, This Allama Tabatabai, what is he known for? Tafsir of Al-Mizan, correct? Tafsir of Al-Mizan is an encyclopedia. It is something else, brothers and sisters. All right. How much he's benefited the Muslims, forget the Shia only, the Muslims with his tafsir. Number five, la yas'amu min talab al-hawa'ij ilayh. This person never gets tired when people are coming to his or her door for help for things. This is a tough one now. I mean, it keeps getting tougher, by the way. But this is a state of mind that a person has, right? LeBron was walking out of one of these games once. They asked him, are you tired? He says, nah, I ain't tired. Tired is in the mind, right? He has a goal. He's focused. In other words, he's figured it out for himself. And he's not going to get tired moving towards that destination because he sees he's moving towards it. Same thing here now, but with the Akhirah. They have understood how great it is to serve mankind, serve the Muslimin. And so what do they do? They don't get tired. Now, it doesn't say they don't get tired in fulfilling people's needs. It says they don't get tired of people knocking on their door, asking them for help. Sometimes you can't even fulfill that person's needs. The Prophet ﷺ is the best example for this. There were times where people would come and they would ask for help, but he would still take them in with open arms and a smile. That's as much as I can give you. Yeah? But that's what I will give you. I won't make you feel bad so that next time you think twice before coming to my door, because this person has understood the importance of helping others. I have seen this in our greets. They talk about it. They say, look, first take care of your wajibat and your harams. Observe those properly. Add salatul layl, inshallah, if you really want to grow. After that, al-khidma ila al-khalq. To help the people, those who have needs, help them out. That's like at the top of their list. Now, each person will have their way of helping. Yeah? This person will not get tired when it comes to the people asking them for help.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karim Adi Alim Halim Hakim Mati. شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمن
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
New British Prime Minister Liz Truss faces hard times as the UK economy is at the risk of recession. Experts say UK economic woes deepened in September as falling business activity indicates that the economy is likely in recession. In this regard, we have taken a look at the world outlets for further details. Stay tuned, please. Reuters wrote, the downturn in British businesses steepened this month as they battled soaring cost and faltering demand, according to a survey that hammered home the rising risk of recession. Released just as Finance Minister Kwasi Kwarteng was due to flesh out the economic agenda of new Prime Minister Liz Truss, the S&P Global CIPS Flash Composite Purchasing Managers Index, PMI, fell to 48.4 from 49.6 in August. It marked the lowest reading since the COVID-19 lockdown of January last year. A Reuters poll of economists had pointed to a reading of 49. Any reading below 50 marks a contraction in activity. The PMI is likely to raise new questions about the health of Britain's economy after consumer confidence fell this month to the lowest level since records began in 1974, according to a survey published recently. Chris Williamson, chief business economist at S&P Global, said UK economic woes deepened in September as falling business activity indicates that the economy is likely in recession. He said the survey's forward-looking gauges suggested worse is to come in the final month of 2022. The PMI's gauge of future output fell to its lowest since May 2020, when Britain was in the grip of its first COVID-19 lockdown. Activity contracted in both the manufacturing and services industries. The PMI for the services sector fell to 49.2 in September from 50.9 in August, the weakest reading since January 2021. While the manufacturing PMI rose to 48.5 from 47.3, much of the improvement reflected a worsening supply chain of performance, which in normal times reflects shortages due to strong demand, but not this time. S&P Global said firms often mentioned reducing output volumes due to weaker intakes of new business, though there were also reports that input shortages, particularly electronics, had constrained production at some units. Despite the pound falling to 37-year lows against the dollar, export orders contracted in both the manufacturing and service sectors, S&P Global said. Also, the website of RT reported the Eurozone's economic downturn deepened in September, with business activity contracting for a third consecutive month, a new survey by S&P Global showed. The report found that manufacturers across the 19-country union were hit hard by a skyrocketing energy cost, with the Purchasing Managers Index, PMI, sinking to its lowest level since 2013. The PMI, which is seen as a good gauge of overall economic health, fell from 48.9 in August to 48.2 in September. Surging energy prices and the rising cost of living are not only hitting demand, but also limiting manufacturing production and service sector activity in some cases, S&P Global economist Chris Williamson said in a statement seen by Bloomberg. Williamson warned a Eurozone recession is on the cards, noting Germany is facing the toughest conditions, with the economy deteriorating at a rate not seen outside of pandemic since the global financial crisis. Overall demand in the Eurozone plunged to its lowest mark since November 2020, when the continent was in the grips of the second wave of the COVID pandemic. The Business Expectations Index also declined, slipping to 53.8 from last month's 56.6, its lowest reading since May 2020. S&P Global expects the euro area's economy to shrink by 0.1% in the third quarter.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is Taqwa, Thursday the 2nd of Ramadan, 1394, 19 September, 1974. And beware of the fire that has been prepared for the faithless, and obey Allah and the Apostle so that you may be granted His mercy. The Quran, Surah number 3, verses 131 and 132. Now, there is no difference between obeying Allah and obeying the Prophet. So why would Allah say to obey Allah and to obey the Prophet? If the two are one and the same, then isn't it unnecessary to mention them separately? No, because if Allah only says obey Allah without mentioning the Prophet or telling people to obey him, people can have a counter-argument against the Prophet. They might say, "We are obeying Allah." People can make all sorts of claims easily, including outward claims of religiosity, piety, and faith. The same sort of people who make these claims are the ones who will say that they are obeying Allah and are His devoted servants.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
During the lifetime of the Prophet, he was not the only one calling people to worship and obey Allah. Those who were on the other side, the ones who were fighting him, claimed exactly the same thing. The leaders of the Jews and the Christians, their priests and their rabbis, also said this. The Jews and the Christians say, "We are God's children and His beloved ones." The Quran, Surah number 5, verse 18. So they say they are a step above the Prophet, because the Prophet claimed to be God's servant, while they claimed to be God's children. They thought that only they could decide what constituted obedience to God. Or to put it another way, they didn't think at all. They pretended that some acts of disobedience to God were in fact obedience to Him. Isn't that right? There were those of them that when they were alone with themselves, they realized what a dark record of deeds they had. They saw that they were saying nothing but lies, and yet they continued to pretend in front of people that they were good and devoted servants of Allah who worshipped and obeyed Him. So we must distinguish between these hypocrites and those who truly worship God. We have to find a way to identify one from the other. This is why when Allah sets out to explain obedience and why it is necessary to the faithful, He doesn't just say to obey Him. Instead, He says, obey God and obey the Apostle.
Allah, I want to thank You. I want to thank You for all the things that You've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, You gave me hope.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.